Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Life Actually with Rebecca Keane. I hope you're having, as always, a great time wherever you're listening to this from. I am still currently in the beautiful Italia, Tuscan countryside, living my best rent-free life at the minute. Before I return to England, not even to London, to England next week, because I currently don't have anywhere to live in London. I actually don't have anywhere to live at all, if I'm being honest. I mean, I'm not, thank God, going to be homeless. And if I ever was, thankfully, I'm in the position where I can just fly back to Ireland and I'm absolutely sorted. But I do have family who live near London, and I've obviously got my boyfriend's house, but then I never want to like overstay my welcome because he lives with other people and stuff. But yeah, I'm literally just floating through life at the minute, which has been kind of fun. I think mostly because I haven't really been thinking about real life, but also now that I'm getting closer to returning to the UK, I am kind of having to think about it a bit more. But you know what? It's fine. I'll deal with it when it comes, and everything's working out in my favour anyway. That was a bit of a tangent for the start of the episode. Usually it takes me a little while to get into them. But there you go. That's my current situation. Living my best life. It is Tuesday evening. I'm in Italy. I've just had some lovely chicken for dinner. I've never ate so well for such an extended period of time in my life because it's been so great. Like, Massey's mum is feeding me nonstop, incredibly deliciously homemade cooked Italian meals. Fresh pasta, pasta sauces I've never even heard of that are absolutely insane. They own a gelateria, so I've had like free ice cream or free gelato anytime I want it, and it's just great. Having the best time ever. And I've also been really able to get into like a lot of my creativity with the artist way and stuff, because it's like just been me for the past few days, the past like 5-6 days, maybe not 6 days, maybe 5 days, and literally like 5 days with yourself when you don't have like loads of friends in this town, because obviously like I don't have loads of English speaking friends in this town, so I've been spending quite a lot of time by myself, which has actually been really nice, I've got to say. It means that you spend a lot of time doing things that you kind of want to do or things that you've been avoiding. And I will get into all that in another episode. I'm going to do one like specifically for Italy and things that I've learned here and things that I've done here, because I think that would be really fun to do and fun to listen to. Also, I have deleted Instagram. Well, okay, no, I haven't deleted Instagram. If that was a title, that would be clickbait, and I will make it a title because I'm planning on doing an episode on that as well in the coming weeks. But basically, I realized on Sunday morning, so it's Monday night. Oh, my God, it feels so long ago. It was literally yesterday. It was yesterday morning. So I realized yesterday morning I was lying in bed, and I'm doing like morning pages at the minute because I'm doing the artist's way. And I woke up, lay in bed, and then went on TikTok and Instagram for like an hour and a bit. And by the time I actually got out of bed, it was maybe like 10, half 10. So it wasn't super late. But my eyes already felt square. Like, they already felt done in. And I just got out of bed, and I do not want that in my life. And I'm like, I'm literally in one of the most beautiful countries in the world by myself. I can do whatever I want. Like, why am I spending it on my phone? So I deleted Instagram for a day. And to be honest, it probably would have been longer than a day if I hadn't have needed it to message people who I only messaged on Instagram, who I was waiting on them like replying. But I haven't been on it. I've like intentionally not been on it. I haven't spent anywhere near as much time on it. I've limited myself now to like half an hour a day. So I did go on it for like 20 minutes last night, and I've been on it maybe for like 25 minutes in total throughout today. But I actually don't even want to use it. I'm like, this is boring. This, like, my eyes are sore from scrolling and looking at the same stuff, and it's not giving me anything. Like, I'm only using it to reply to messages, and I'm so bad as well at replying to messages. Like, if you know me, if you're my friend, if you're somebody that has ever messaged me, you will know how tragically bad I am at replying to messages on any form of social media or text or WhatsApp or whatever. Because I'm always like, oh, I'll do it later. And I never get around to it. And then it just like goes away. But like, I replied to so many messages today. Not that I get loads, but I've replied to loads that I have accidentally been ignoring for like the past few weeks as well. Because I was like, oh, now I can be intentional with my time. So feeling really good about that. We'll do a whole episode about that at some point in the coming weeks. It was actually Chelsea Riffe, I don't know how to say her name, who I follow on Instagram, who did it. And I was like, I need a bit of this. So that's what I've been doing. was not planning on talking about that today, but obviously I had to tell you because I feel very, very smug and I wanted to share that to make you feel bad about yourself. So if you're spending loads of time on Instagram, that's a you problem, not a me problem. No, I'm only joking. You should think about even deleting it for like a day or limiting your time or whatever. Because I have got so much from it literally in less than 48 hours. It's kind of mad. But that is a conversation for another day once I've actually done it for a few more days rather than just 2 days. Anyway, moving on. Getting into this week's little pointers, my little notes. If you've never listened to this podcast before, if this is your first time listening, generally every week I make notes about things that I want to talk about in like the first 10, 15 minutes. And then I get into like the actual topic that I want to discuss in the podcast, because I personally like podcasts that chat shit, give me a little bit of insight into the person's life, and also then educate me in some way or just like make me feel good about myself. Maybe I can tell you like things that are going shit in my life and it'll make you feel good about yourself. So if you have a house, you're winning over me, which is, you know, is something. So that should make you feel good about yourself. But anyway, this is the way that I do my podcast. I have very random notes and then I get into the main body. So starting with today's introductory notes, okay? First point, McDonald's in Italy. McDonald's in Italy. Italian McDonald's is next level. I've known this for a while because a few months ago, Massey was here and I was in London and he sent me a photo of a pistachio McFlurry and I knew I was missing out. And also just from previous experience, the Dutch McDonald's, I've had it once. It was incredible in Amsterdam and I wasn't high at the time. So I actually know it was incredible. Best chicken nuggets I've ever had in my life, apart from the corn ones, which always hit and are actually better than the meat ones, 100%. But Dutch McDonald's, it was very good that one time. I don't know about any other times. French McDonald's, also fantastic. Big, big, big fan. I would have had that, not a lot, but like anytime we went on holiday, we would generally like stop there. And France was kind of where we would go on holiday quite a lot. American McDonald's, kind of shite. Don't really buy into it. UK McDonald's, I could pass in a McDonald's at home, you know. I just, there's nothing really that excites me there. But Italian McDonald's, oh my God. You can get Parmesan sticks, like sticks of Parmigiano Reggiano. I think that's how you say it. Like literally Parmesan in like a block. You can get that with part of your Happy Meal or just with like your general Big Mac. They have like a double chicken Big Mac. They have all these fancy wraps and sandwiches. They have these little like, they actually look like empanadas or something, like, but they're not. I took a photo of it. Maybe I'll include it in this week's Instagram post. But like, they're filled with tomato and mozzarella. Picture like a UK tomato or like mozzarella ball or stick or whatever they're called at McDonald's. You can tell I don't really go to the McDonald's in UK that much, but picture that. But it's like a pastry almost with tomato and like tomato sauce and mozzarella in it. Like it looked insane. It literally looked insane. But I only realized what it was after I sat down and saw some girl eating it. Otherwise I would have got it, but I was going for a train, so I couldn't. Pistachio McFlurry lived up to every expectation I had and beyond. It was just like incredible. Like the creaminess, the pistachio-ness, the sweetness, the ice creamness, oh my God, like just absolutely incredible. 10 out of 10 would recommend. The Coke Zero was very expensive. Now, this is from a different Italian McDonald's experience. So the first one I went to was at Pisa train station because I was waiting on a train to Florence. And then the second one I went to was on Saturday whenever I went in for a little day trip to Florence. And I went to the one at Florence train station and I just really was craving a Coke Zero. Like I was really craving that hit of Coca-Cola. And I went to buy it at McDonald's and it was like €4.70 or something. Oh, hold on. For anyone who doesn't know, that is the sound of a landline. But you just heard. And apparently in this country, they go on forever and ever and ever and ever because that literally lasted like 2 full minutes. And that's not an exaggeration. And every time I thought it was over, it would like, there would be a 5 second pause and then it would start again. But yeah, €4.70 or something like that for Coke Zero. And I was like, no way. So I went and bought a bottle for like €3.50 or something in the shop next door because that €1.20 really mattered to me. Like it was the principle. I'm not going to be ripped off by McDonald's. But apart from that, absolutely cracker. Like it was so good. It was so, so, so good. And I am planning on returning at some point before I return to England. So that was the first thing on my list. McDonald's in Italy, Italian McDonald's was the first thing on my list. Number two, Sabrina Carpenter. I fancy this girl so much. I have such a girl crush on her. She is so beautiful. Her energy is impeccable. She's such a pop icon, superstar, girl energy, and I am so here for it. She's been on like my radar. Like I knew who she was for years just from like the Disney Channel and stuff, but she was maybe the generation or the few years below me on the Disney Channel. I actually don't know what age she is. Maybe I'll check it out now. So I never like followed her or anything or was too aware of her. I just knew that she was like a Disney Channel kid. She's 24, so she is 2 years younger than me. Actually three nearly. Yeah, like 2.5, 3 years younger than me. So I didn't really know who she was, but she's like been popping off. She popped up on my TikTok at the start of this year with her new album, or maybe it was the end of last year, Emails I Didn't Send, I think it's called. So good. It is like such a good album. It's such a good pop album, and it's so vibey, and it's so like girly. Like the songs are so like sexy, but in like a girly way. That's the only way I can describe them. Like they really make you feel empowered. They make you want to like dance, you know? So good. And I don't know if you've seen her stage presence. She was opening for Taylor Swift in the Southern American leg of her tour, I think. Absolutely insane. Or the South American leg of her tour. Insane. This girl's stage presence is impeccable. Like I'm literally looking at her like, I want to be you. I want to have long blonde hair like that. She looks like an actual pop Barbie. Absolutely incredible. You need to get on the hype if you're not already. In fact, I'm probably late to the hype, but listen to the album. It's so good. Feathers is so good. Nonsense is so good. And All Because I Liked a Boy, I think that was the first song that I heard by her. So, so, so good. Like, amazing. I think there's also some beef between her and Olivia Rodrigo, or like fake beef. I don't know. But there's some like gossip there as well. But I don't know. They share an ex. But so good. From my understanding, the song, so the boy Olivia Rodrigo wrote Driver's License about is the boy Sabrina Carpenter was with at the time she wrote Driver's, at the time Olivia wrote Driver's License. And Sabrina wrote All Because I Liked a Boy, or Because I Liked a Boy, in response to all of the shit show that went round whenever Driver's License came out, because she was being like really attacked online due to people saying that she had like was a homewrecker and had like cheated on, now being like the other woman that he, Joshua Bassett, I don't even know who he is, I just know the name, had cheated on like Olivia with, and like Sabrina was the other woman, this whole thing, but apparently there actually was no overlap, and the media and tabloids just turned it into this whole thing, and she got all this hate, and that song is so powerful. So it's really good album, really great energy, just like makes you want to be a pop star and makes you feel like a little pop icon whenever you listen to it. So highly recommend giving her a follow and listen to her music, even though I'm probably like 4 years late in this, I've got to be honest, because I'm usually not very up to date with music. But yeah, big fan, big fan. Next thing I want to talk about, I got a 50 euro fine. I was doing so well. I was doing so well with the trains in Italy, because you have to get your ticket like validated at every stop. Not every stop, but like every journey you take. They're really, I don't know how anybody does not pay, or does get a, blah, blah, blah. I don't know how anybody gets away with not paying for their ticket. I don't think you can on Italian trains, because there's always an inspector. All of the ones I've met have been really nice, but like they properly inspect your tickets. You have to check in on the app if you do it on the app. If you do train line, you have to like enter your name and make sure you carry like a valid form of photo ID with you. It's kind of crazy. So I bought tickets on the way from La Spezia to Pisa. My aunt was flying back from Pisa to London, and I bought our tickets. Now I was going from Pisa to, sorry, I was going from La Spezia to Pisa, Pisa to Florence, Florence to Camuccia, which meant that I needed like three different legs of the ticket. So I booked mine separately. That was fine. Booked her separately. That was fine. £9 ticket. The little ticket inspector came around. I was feeling really smug, because I was like, I've smashed this. 50 euro fine. 50 euro fine. It was going to be 100, but mine was for the right day. Basically, I booked her on the same train, but for the Friday and it was meant to be for the Thursday. So we were on the train on the Thursday at the exact same time it was meant to be. And it was like half an hour late as well. So that was even more annoying because then I missed my next train and I had to buy a new ticket because they're so funny about the tickets. I got fined 50 euros and he was like, it's 100 euros. And I was like, no, but I have a ticket for today. And he was like, oh, right, okay. And then I felt bad because obviously I was speaking in English and he was like, spoke very good English, but I think he was confused. And he was really nice about it. He was like, yeah, that'll be 50 euros. It's like, can you can clearly tell if she's going to the airport. Why can you not just let us off with it? But we didn't get off with it. So just be aware. If you're traveling in the beautiful Italia, make sure your train tickets are correct because you don't want to get a fine like I did. What else did I write in my list? What else did I write? Bringing out my inner pop girly that was kind of released as Sabrina Carpenter. I'm also just kind of leaning into my silly era, really enjoying it, really recommending it to everybody. I said it's so much fun being pretty. That's the point in and of itself. I think that's because right before I wrote that, this like old Italian man who was like operating the door in McDonald's at Pisa train station said, he called me like Signorina Bella, which is like beautiful miss, like beautiful lady. And then I like wrote that down. I was like, I am loving this. I am a beautiful girl. I am a beautiful woman. I am a beautiful miss. Like, this is amazing. I forgot I am this bitch. So I wrote that down. It's so much fun being pretty. And I've been leaning into that energy, you know. It's fun to lean into your pretty energy even whenever you don't feel it. I really, really, really recommend. Okay, next thing. Love stories too good on my Insta. I'm not talking to people. I have no idea what that means. No idea what that means. Just going to brush past that. Maybe it'll click with me at some point. The very last thing that I said is walking past an American woman in Florence and hearing her say make a wish. And I just knew. Ah, yes. So on Saturday, I was in the beautiful Firenze and I was walking past the Uffizi Museum. Uffizi. I'm not sure how it's pronounced. And this American woman said really loudly, hey, everyone, make a wish. And before I even like heard her finish the sentence, I was like, it's 11:11. And she was like, it's 11:11. Literally right after I realized it was 11:11. And it was just such a like really special moment in a really childlike way. Like just walking along, I felt like the universe was really aligning. I had such a nice day. I just had all'antico vinaio and some gelato and I was like living my best life. And, you know, I actually didn't have gelato. I had affogato, but that was insane. I'll talk about that in my Italy podcast as well. It was just such a nice, like, synchronistic moment. Like, it was literally like the universe was shouting at me, 11:11, make a wish. And I just thought that was so special. And I was like, oh, I'm kind of here living out one of my wishes here, like being in Italy by myself. I'm so lucky to have in-laws kind of that like want me to be here and who support me in this way and who let me be here and who encourage me to be here, even though like I'm here to learn Italian. That's why I'm spending this like time by myself. And yeah, it's just really incredible and I feel really, really grateful for it. So that is all that I have to say in the intro today. I hope you enjoyed it. Now the episode can really begin. I really like these little intro sections that I do because I never know what I'm going to say because I don't remember what I write. I write it throughout the week and I rarely check over it before I start talking about it out loud. So I hope you enjoy it as much as I do. If you don't, you can always skip to when it's over, you know? Anyway, I haven't even told you what we're going to talk about today. So let me tell you. Now, when did I leave? I left on a Saturday. I left London on the Saturday and on the Thursday before, Massey and I went to an event at White City House in London called An Evening with Gordon Ramsay or Stories with Gordon Ramsay or something like that. And basically it was like a Soho House event where Gordon Ramsay was being interviewed with, it was like a restaurateur, food critic, person who was interviewing him because it was the 25th anniversary of Restaurant Gordon Ramsay, which is his 3 Michelin star restaurant in Chelsea. And to be honest, now I really like Gordon Ramsay and I really, really respect him. And I think he's obviously incredible, but he has this very like, you can get like a very strong feel of what he's like through the TV. And I had no idea what to expect because obviously he's a very strong personality. And because I am kind of between houses at the minute. I wasn't in London. I was staying in Bicester, and I really could not be bothered going into London just for this, because also you have to get like your train ticket and everything else, and they're not cheap. And I was working that day as well. So I was like, oh, I don't know how I'm going to like fit it in. But anyway, we went. I'm so glad we went. Like, I'm so glad we went. We had such a good time. I'm so glad I didn't let like, sometimes it's laziness. Sometimes it is like listening to yourself and your gut. But my gut was saying go. I was actually just being lazy and telling myself I didn't want to go. But I am so glad that Massey like gave me the push to actually go, because we had such a nice evening and it was really inspiring. Like, I wasn't expecting to leave inspired. I was just expecting to leave having had a really nice evening, like listening to such an incredible icon of the industry talk about his story. But it was so inspiring. And as soon as we left, I like literally on the tube to Marylebone from White City, I made a list of like everything that I had got from that hour long talk, because it was only an hour. So I'm going to run through some of the lessons I learned from an evening with Gordon Ramsay. Number one, which I didn't write down, but I do want to mention, and I'm not going to number them because there are too many as I go out. This is actually kind of a side note, but I'm going to say it anyway. There was free wine and free cocktails, and any event with free wine and free cocktails automatically gets my vote. They also had like virgin cocktails and mocktails for anybody who didn't drink alcohol. It was just such a nice vibe. It was very intimate, like really, really intimate. I'm going to say there were maybe like, I'm going to say 50 people. In fact, you know what? I'll say 60 people, but it wasn't full. So I think there were maybe like 45, 50 people in this decent sized room. It wasn't huge. And then he was just like right there. And we actually got really good seats as well. But like every seat was a good seat because it was so small. There were only like three rows of seats. So it was really good. A lot of his people were there. I don't know how often he does events like this. Obviously, it's Soho House, so you can't take any photos or anything like that. But he was like taking photos with everybody at the end. And he was so gracious, like such a lovely man. Genuinely, I got like a nice vibe off of him. But I will talk about that more towards the end. So the first lesson was just provide free drinks at an event and everybody will have a good time. But that actually, I don't even think Gordon had anything to do with that. Okay, so something, the first thing that I really took away from him was that man is so sure of himself and he knows so well that he is the best. He knows he's the best, he believes he's the best, and he shows up and delivers every meal as if it is the best. And something that, like the line that I actually wrote was, know you're the best, believe you're the best, and show up and deliver as the best. So he was talking about the fact that every plate of food that goes out at Restaurant Gordon Ramsay is the absolute best it can be. There's no star treatment for Michelin guides. There's no star treatment for special guests, because everybody there is a special guest and every single dish should be Michelin worthy. Every dish and every service is at that standard. So every service at every table is the exact same because it's always the absolute best. And I thought that was so powerful because the question was, are you ever fearful of losing one of your stars or losing the Michelin stars? And he was like, no, I'll just get it back. I think I actually make a note of this later on as well. But he was like, no, I'll just get it back. Like, and he tells a story about the Michelin guides, like critics, I guess, coming to the restaurant and he realized it was them. And it, like literally nothing changed. I think somebody was like, his maitre d' was like, oh my God, what do we do? Like the Michelin people are here, blah, blah, blah. And Gordon was like, don't do anything different. Just do what we always do. And I don't know if it was that time that got him the star or whatever. He did tell some funny story about realizing it was them. And then because he realized it was them, he had to wait till the next year to get the third star or something like that. But it was the fact that he said with such confidence, like every single dish that leaves that kitchen is as best it's going to be. And everybody wants it to be the best it's going to be. And I just thought that was so fascinating and something you can like apply to life. Like, is your work always the best it's going to be? Like, for me, this is something I definitely haven't got into yet because I'm also very much sometimes you just have to show up and start and get it done. And maybe that's okay, messy at the beginning, and then it grows into like, I don't know, podcasts, let's say like Diary of a CEO, which are always absolutely impeccable, right? Production and advertising and SEO and everything else of that is incredible. But I guess everybody gets to that point. And at the beginning, it's okay to actually just start and start messy, but get it started and then aim for that. Because I really think even more than delivering the absolute best every time, it's like believing and working as if you're best. Maybe sometimes you get it wrong, but if you believe that you can bounce back and that your work is of absolutely incredible quality, then that is so powerful. So I thought that was really, like, just really great to absorb, you know. It's a weird way for me to phrase that, I don't know. But yeah, really, really, really fascinating and a great lesson, I think, from Gordon. Another thing that he says is that everything is about balance. Life is about balance. Work life is about balance. So at this restaurant, they worked Monday to Friday and closed on the weekend. Now, this is like a 3 Michelin star restaurant, and they closed on the weekend in London for 20 years so that they could have a life. And they kept those 3 Michelin stars throughout that time. And he says also, or he said also, that he worked flat out for years and years and started completely from the bottom, completely grassroots, and always at any job that he had, and he did work his way up, he would like always try and do a different station so that he got really good at the different, like, different aspects of everything. So all parts of cooking, rather than just, like, I don't know, say you're a pastry chef, like, he didn't specialize in pastry chef. He got really fucking good at being a baker or a pastry chef, or on cutting veg or on fish or whatever. And he got really, really, really good at all of them, but he never just stayed at one the whole time, and he gave it everything. And that's why he is Gordon Ramsay, you know. Something that he said that I cannot find in my notes. Did I mention it before? I mentioned it now. Am I going to mention it again later? I don't think so. So obviously, actually, I guess it's not that obvious. I just know this. He was trained by Marco Pierre White. Like, he worked under him at his restaurant whenever Marco Pierre White was getting his Michelin star or stars. I'm not sure how many he has now. Marco Pierre White, again, another huge chef, really famous, absolutely incredible caliber. I've never eaten at one of his restaurants, but I would really like to. And he is, like, very well renowned for being very, very scary. And apparently he gave Gordon, like, a really hard time. But Gordon was working for some restaurant, I don't remember what it was called, when he was really young, and he saw that Marco Pierre White had just opened up this new restaurant, and he literally went out into the phone box. This is the way he told the story. Now, it has been 2 weeks, so I feel like I'm making some mistakes, but this is the gist of it. He went out into the phone box from the job he was currently in, which he was really enjoying and he was really comfortable in. But then that was the problem. He was really comfortable in it. So, like, he went out to the phone box, phoned Marco, and was like, I want to come work for you. When can I start? And he started a few days later. And that was really what skyrocketed him, because he learned, like, a whole new set of skills there. And it got him into a whole new level of restaurant. And I thought that was so inspiring. Like, I really was like, I was sitting there, like, every sentence I was like, oh my God, I need a notebook, or I need to record this or something. Like, I really wanted to get my phone out and record or write things down, but I was afraid of getting shouted at. Because it's fucking Soho, but it was grand. I remembered a lot of good things, so that was good. But, like, whenever he said that, I was like, wow, like, you really do just have to go after what you want and take that inspired action and do, like, that's not even whatever it takes, that's just having balls and putting yourself out there, you know. Like, you have to have the guts to ask. You have to have the guts to ask. Sometimes you do just have to say, like, phone somebody up and be like, I want to come work for you. When can I start? This is what I can do. X, Y, Z, blah, 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 blah. And then you're working for one of the best restaurants in the country, and then it's the world, and then you own one of the best restaurants in the country, in the world. So, yeah, I really liked that part. I thought it was so, like, the gumption, you know? We love a bit of gumption. So, on the note of balance, as I was talking about before that, he did say that after a few years of the grind, he worked as a yacht on a private chef for a year to completely reset. And I thought, again, that was really powerful about balance. Like, life is about balance. We always have years where we really throw ourselves into our careers or our jobs or our families or whatever it is. But we also need to have years where we just, like, breathe. And if we can, just relax and still work hard, but maybe in a different way. Prioritize different things, because balance really is key. And he is convinced that that is why they have kept those 3 stars for 20 something years, because if, like, they're like a family in that restaurant. Like he said, everybody knows everybody, like everybody's so close. And there's so many staff. I think he said there were like 60 or 70 staff. Like everybody wants the best, and it's because they're treated the best and it's the best environment. And I thought that was really powerful as well. A quote that he said is, learn to dance in the storm. I did not remember this, but Massey said it to me whenever we were on the train home, because he was like, oh, I thought you would have really picked up on that. And I was like, no, I didn't even hear that. But I think it's because I was thinking of all the other things that I needed to write down at that moment. But I love that. Like, everybody's heard the quote, you know, when it rains, learn to dance in the rain, or there's no rainbow without the rain, etc. But just hearing him say that, I thought was like really powerful, because this is actually coming from somebody who sat in front of me, who is an absolute multimillionaire, absolute peak of his industry, an icon in the industry, a role model for so many people. And he gives back a lot from the sound of things as well to the community. And for him to say, like, learn to dance in the storm, everybody has shit times, but you actually do just have to make the most of what it is. So the interviewer did ask, what happens if you lose a star? And his response was like, well, then you get it back again. And I just thought that also was like, you know, nothing's forever. Okay. You break up with somebody, you're going to be okay. Okay. You lose your job, that's fine. You'll get another job. Like, life goes on and you get to go on with life. And like, that's really cool and really incredible and such an honor, you know. He then went on to talk about his mentor style and what he's like as a boss. Now, everybody knows Gordon Ramsay for being very scary. Everybody's seen You Are an Idiot Sandwich. Everybody has, you know, seen the episodes of Kitchen Nightmares and Hell's Kitchen and everything else. The man is notorious for being scary as anything, and for taking no bullshit and for holding no prisoners. Like, he is a scary man. And I will say, his presence was very, like, it's very strong, yet a very solid presence. Like, this is, you know, a man who doesn't question himself at all. But at the end, after the talk was over, he waited for, like, everybody kind of queued up if they wanted to get photos of him or talk to him or whatnot. And I wasn't even going to queue up. And then Matthew was like, oh, let's just do it. And we were like, you know what? Let's just do it. And he asked us, this was so powerful. Not powerful, that's not the right words, but it was very, it was a nice touch, right? It was a nice touch. Maybe powerful was the right word. So he like asked us our names. He asked every single person their names, and he shook our hands and he looked us in the eyes and he was like, Massimiliano, blah, 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 blah. And then he was like, hi, you know, so lovely to meet you. Thank you so much. That was like really inspiring, such a great talk. He was like, thank you. What was your first name? And I was like, Rebecca. And he's like, Rebecca, thank you so much for coming. And it was just so lovely. And then we got our photo with him, and Massey made a joke about Gino DeCampo, and it was just really funny. And even though he has this very strong, very masculine, very don't fuck with me energy, there was such a personable energy about him as well. And I think that is like a quality that is present in a lot of great leaders and a lot of standout people in the, you know, society and the world. The fact that they can be very no bullshit, and that's how they got to the top of their game, right? The fact that they are no bullshit, the fact that they take no prisoners, but also the fact that they're actually decent people and they have a warmth to them as well. And he did genuinely have like a warmth to him. I am quite good at reading people's energy, and I you know, I did like him. So yeah, it was really moving. I was just very impressed. That's the word I've been looking for. Very impressed with the fact that he asked us our names and took the time to have a conversation with us, even though he'd been standing there for 20 minutes doing the same thing with everybody else, and there were people behind us as well. It was very impressive. It was very impressive. So good job, Gordon. Good job. One day you're going to listen to this. Maybe I'll actually have you on. I'll have you on as a guest, and I'll be telling you about this time, and I'll be like, you know, I was really impressed. And you'll be like, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what you'll be like. But mark my words, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. So anyway, he is very tough, but very firm. We've all seen it. And Angela Langdon, who's one of my favorite chefs, she was actually trained by him, and she now has her own restaurant. She's on Great British Menu. She's an incredible chef in and of herself. I'd actually really like to eat at her restaurant. She has one in Covent Garden, because it used to be under my office and work. But I don't remember the name of it, but it was like a little Italian bistro deli. And then she has like a main one somewhere else in London. They've got really good reviews. Anyway, she's an incredible chef and a really good TV personality.
But she said that when she first started at Restaurant Gordon Ramsay, there was like somebody from New Zealand, a New Zealander who worked there, but he was leaving soon. And apparently Gordon was going in on him, like was really, really, really giving him a hard time, giving him a bollocks in every day. And she was like, God, this, like, he actually is really scary. But then she found out that Gordon was also letting this New Zealander like stay with them in their family home, and had got this guy a job lined up for whenever he was leaving for a few months. And these were at other like top restaurants. And what I was thinking about there was, you know, keep your standards high, get people who are working for you to work hard, have high expectations of others and yourself, but also give back. And he did talk a lot about what he does to give back to the community and give back to the, you know, the people who raised him and the communities that he grew up in as well. So I thought that was really powerful. Like, it's have high standards, but also give back. He also said it's about banter. He was like, yeah, it can be really hard. And obviously the TV shows the really scary bits, but like in his restaurant, everybody respects him and everybody respects each other. And it literally produces the best of the best. And he said having banter is like so important. And whenever he said that, it got me thinking about Reno and whenever I worked at Reno. So in hindsight now, my friend Sheena and I were talking about this the other day because we both worked at Reno at the same time, both in IT. And at the time, there were some things that like I wasn't such a fan of, but like overall, I do look back at Reno with a very warm heart. Like I really enjoyed it. I made some incredible friends there. The guys were so fun. Like they were so fun. And even though the work wasn't very exciting, like what I was doing wasn't particularly exciting, it was not aligned with me at all. The fact that the guys that I worked with, and they were all guys apart from Sheena, and Shirley, actually, but like basically all men, it was like 95% men. And I really don't think that's me exaggerating. Like genuinely, there were like nearly 1,000 people who worked at that factory. And I would say 50 were women. It was like the guys that I worked with were incredible. Like they were, most of them were so much fun. They were such good crack. We had such good banter. We had such good relationships. A lot of the older men like genuinely looked out for me. And like that is something that I really miss. I think it's something that comes whenever you're in something together, right? We were all in that little F1 bubble together. I had to pause to give the dog some attention, but she seems a lot happier now. But yeah, like when I worked at Reno at Alpine, it was hard, and sometimes the days lasted really long, and there were a lot of shitty people, especially because I worked in IT support. But the very annoying, shitty people literally did not even numerically come close to the percentage of genuinely warm, funny, kind men who would look out for you and have banter with you in the corridors. And like even now, in like a non-creepy way, will still like message me being like, oh, hope you're all good, how's life going, blah blah blah, because they genuinely cared and they looked out for you, and I cared for them as well. And not just the older ones, the younger ones too, like we're so much crack and so much banter, and I'm still really good friends with a lot of them. And well, a lot of them was an exaggeration, but still really good friends with quite a few of them. And it's like that relationship that you can have with your colleagues is so powerful, especially when you're a part of something that maybe other people don't understand. There's a saying that goes on in F1, and it is actually maybe not a saying, maybe it's something that I've just discussed with Sheena before, but the big benefit of working in F1, unless you're a driver or like a director, is that you work in F1, okay? Because the pay isn't fantastic. There are incredibly high expectations. Obviously, everybody's under pressure to win. It can be very, very high pressure at times, especially at certain points throughout the year for like car build and everything else. And the thanks isn't great. But when you're surrounded by people who make it easier, who have a laugh with you, who have the banter and like have the crack and everything else, it makes it so much easier. And then that got me thinking about support systems and how important it is to have a support system who you can have fun with, because having fun is so important. And even though, you know, Gordon was saying that, yeah, he does give people shit, but he also looks out for them. And like, that's so important. It's important to have that banter. It's important to have fun. And that makes all the difference in how you experience something. So find your people, find your support system, find the people you can have a laugh with that make life a little bit easier, even if it is really serious. And I think you're onto a winner. I think this is proven as well by the absolute restaurant and chef icons that have come out under Gordon Ramsay's wing. So you've got Angela Langdon, you've got Paul Ainsworth, who I didn't actually know was, but apparently was, and you've got Claire Smith, who is actually from Northern Ireland. And I want to go eat at her restaurant in Notting Hill so badly. It's called Core. It's, I think it has 2 or 3 Michelin stars as well. And she's on TV every so often. She seems like such a, she always looks a bit serious, but like a very kind woman, I guess. She has like a nice energy, especially whenever she's like judging shows like Great British Menu. I don't know if she's judged or not, but I've definitely seen her given feedback on some things before. Maybe it was MasterChef or something. But she is like, you can tell she's no bullshit as well, but she's also got that very warm presence. And like the fact that these are just 3 incredible chefs that have come out from under his wing and say decent things about him. I don't know if they're all good. I don't know, but I haven't heard them say anything bad things about him. And it just goes to show that when you have a support system, when you have fun, when you take things seriously and everybody's working for the same goal, incredible results are produced. Incredible people are produced from that. Skills are gained and improved, and amazing things can happen. Gordon told this really funny story about when this famous restaurant critic, I do not know, nor do I remember the name of, came in to restaurant Gordon Ramsay one night and sat down, and he had left like a really bad review of this restaurant or a previous restaurant not that long ago. And Gordon Ramsay saw him come in, or the maitre d' saw him come in. I think the maitre d's name is Sean Paul or something. It's something, do you know, it's not Sean Paul. I was going to say it's something very French, but Sean Paul is the most Belfast name I've ever heard in my life. John Paul, it would be John Paul, I guess. In a French accent you could be like Jean Paul, but not Sean Paul, John Paul. I just want to like clarify that. Anyway, John Paul, who I think is the name of the maitre d' guy who's worked there for years and years and years, and now he's like really high up in the Gordon Ramsay Association, he came in and was like, oh, the critic's here, blah, blah, blah. What do you want me to do? And Gordon Ramsay was like, leave it to me. And he went out and he got the critic's coat and he gave it to him and he told him to fuck off. And I was like, whenever I heard it, I was like, what? Like, okay, I don't know how I feel about that. That seems a bit harsh. But it, then I was thinking again, because he started talking about it, and it was like, don't let people talk down to you. Like, do not let people talk down to you. Do not let people say shit about you, and you don't have to be okay with it. Like, okay, those people are entitled to talk shit about you, to be fair, but like, you don't have to be okay with it, and you don't have to put up with that. You don't have to give them the time of day or space just because it's polite or the right thing to do. And the funnier thing about this was that Joan Rivers, who, Massey didn't know who Joan Rivers was, but if you're like grew up in the UK or even the States, I think you would know who she is. But like, Joan Rivers is an icon in her own right and is known for being very mouthy and very wordy. And she was like this critic's guest for that night, and Gordon sent her flowers the next day to be like, apologies, you could have stayed, he just couldn't, you know, I didn't mean to be rude to you, you're more than welcome anytime, like, we want to invite you back. And she sent the flowers back, and I think that that is so funny because she had the standards as well. So do not let people talk down to you and then you have to like feel like you have to sit there and accept it, because you don't. You can have your own standards, you can write your own rules, and you can tell somebody to fuck off if you want in the middle of your restaurant, because it's your restaurant, it's your work, and you don't have to give space to people who don't appreciate it. He then went on to tell some stories about the times before he actually opened restaurant Gordon Ramsay. So I didn't fully understand some of it, but from what I do understand, he was working in a restaurant called Aubergine, which was really famous and really, really successful. And like, I think Princess Diana and everybody else had eaten there, okay? And he stole the reservation book, because it was reservation books back then, not like apps like it is now. He stole the reservation book from Aubergine and brought it to restaurant Gordon Ramsay and like phoned all of the reservations. And then he was booked up like 6 months in advance and Aubergine didn't have anybody. And he was like, yeah, it was really ballsy. It was kind of mean, but it meant that my business was booked 6 months in advance. And then all of the bookings that we couldn't take, we sent them to Aubergine anyway. So they were still getting the business. And the way he told it was so funny. But although this is a little bit cheeky, it got me thinking again. It's like so much along the same lines of going out and phoning Marco Pierre. white. It's about having the balls, the gumption, the guts to actually do something. It doesn't have to be naughty like that, you know, it doesn't have to be bad, but actually just doing something and having the guts that's outside the lines, outside the box, and that's going to put you forward. So I think that was a really, you know, something that stuck out to me, a really good lesson in a way as well. And he also said that, so with the reservation book, he was booked up 6 months in advance, but once he told that food critic to fuck off, he was booked up 12 months in advance. So I think that just goes to show, is there such a thing as bad publicity nowadays? I kind of think there is, but also it's okay to own it. It is okay to own your shit, and it is okay to stand up for yourself, because people respond well to that. He did say that he thinks the key to success with that restaurant, Gordon Ramsay, is that there is a team of nearly 100 people. There are 10 tables. They serve 40 people at lunch and 40 people at dinner, and like, that's it. So it's nice to niche and get really good at what you do, and you don't have to spread yourself too thin, is what I took away from that. So I think that was really powerful. Like, I struggle a lot with a niche, especially with this podcast, but I do think that my niche is actually just like being in your 20s, figuring it out, trying to live a life that I love. Maybe that's quite a broad niche, but I enjoy these conversations, and I, you know, enjoy talking about things that I've learned and events that I've been to and everything else, and, you know, Italian McDonald's and all that. And there was a time earlier this year, whenever I first started my podcast, where I was like, oh, I need to do all this really intense self-development stuff and produce an episode and every single thing, and I want to get out 2 a week. And I think at that point, I actually was spreading myself too thin. And then that's why I didn't record episodes for like 6 months, because I was like, I feel so uninspired. So do not spread yourself too thin. Get really good at what you do. Figure it out what it is, like what you're doing. Experiment around. Like I said, Gordon was like doing bits of everything and got really good at everything. And like, that's a really great thing to do as well. And, you know, just serve 40 people at lunch and 40 people at dinner and give yourself weekends off. Something interesting that he did say, which I didn't know. I knew, so he is Scottish, and then I think he moved to Banbury, which is why it doesn't sound Scottish. But he was chosen to play for Rangers when he was around 18, but a bad tackle meant that he was injured and he couldn't do it anymore. And then I was thinking, like, this man has mastered the pivot and also divine timing. Maybe he would have went on to be a great footballer, but he would be retired by now because he's like 54 or 55 or something. Like, he is at the top of his game as a restaurateur, as a chef, as a businessman. And maybe he wouldn't be here today, like, or have reached his level of success if he had not have had that bad tackle and if he had not have injured himself. And I just think that's really powerful, because sometimes we think we're on the right track and it's what we really want, and then something happens that completely derails what we want. We end up on a completely different path, and it ends up being like perfect path for us, and we end up thriving and enjoying it more there than we do everywhere else. So I think that was really fascinating. It was a really interesting story. I'd never heard it. I didn't realize that. And whenever I did hear it, I was like, oh wow, sometimes you just never know. You never know. It might feel like the wrong and the worst thing and the end of the world at the time, but actually maybe it's for the best. So we're coming kind of to the end of my notes now, and I'm gonna round it out just by saying again that, like, honestly, he was very sure of himself, very confident in and of himself, which is very evident. And obviously, these are traits of very successful people. It's something that I try to be myself. Obviously, there's still like a lot of learning to do there. And something that I think we can all be is just kind of throw the humbleness out the window and know that we're good and know that our work is the best and know that every plate going out there is worthy of a Michelin star, because we're showing up in a Michelin worthy way. And if we do lose a Michelin star, guess what? You get it back and it's perfect. So that is like the big thing that I learned, is that show up and believe in yourself. Like, this man's confidence seemed unshakable. I also don't know why I keep saying this man. I did speak about in my The Artist Way podcast, which came out on Saturday and is going to come out this Saturday as well, about the fact that because I've been in Italy for quite a while and I've been speaking literally just Italian for the past 5 days because I haven't had any English speakers around, and I've been trying to communicate in Italian, but I think I'm forgetting to speak English a little bit. So if these episodes sound a little bit trippy uppier than usual, that's why. And that's why I've used the word powerful like 74 times. I will be back to my usual more literate self. I don't know how much more literate, but more literate in the coming weeks. So this is a man that is so sure of himself, so confident of himself, and it really shows, and it generally is really inspiring. And in spite of all that, he did take the time to have a conversation with us, to learn our names. Maybe he'll remember it whenever he bumps into me in the street one day and is like, oh my goodness, Rebecca, I met you at that event that time. Thank you for coming. Was going to buy your cookbook, Gordon, but it was £65. And maybe next time. Maybe next time. I do love a good cookbook though. Maybe you can like send it to me or something if you're listening to me. That would be really cool. That can be like my token item for the flat that I'm manifesting in London. So just putting that out there on the off chance that you're listening to this. I don't have an address for you to send it to. But one day I will. It'll be fine. So yeah, very honestly nice man. We had such a great evening. And to me, it seems like Gordon took a lot of chances, like stealing the book, phoning Marco Pierre White. He moved to France when he was like 22 or something and became fluent in French from just working and being immersed in French culture and French cuisine. And he said that like the French chefs would like make fun of him and make fun of his English and everything else. And that's literally how he learned, from just getting so involved and working with the bakers and working with the pastry chefs. And then he studied it every day. So like throw yourself into it, take a chance and show up with confidence and conviction in those chances. By showing up with confidence, by showing up with conviction in every decision that you make, then it means you're in the right place at the right time with the right people to make it work. You create your own luck. We create our own luck. Actually, that's literally something that he said. I think we create our own luck. He did, because I have it written down here a few points down. And that is like so powerful. Right places, right time, show up with conviction and everything's going to go your way and work out for you. The last thing that I've said here is he got into triathlons at 40 and he's 56 now. And he said he feels better now than he did at 36. And that again got me thinking, it's never too late to start. He said he was out of college a few weeks ago. It was the day or a few days before he had this talk. And a young woman, in his words, said to him that she felt too old to be starting afresh and she was 19. 19? That's like not 10 years younger than me, but nearly. Like, what the hell? And that got me thinking that, do we all just think that we're too old when really life is just beginning whenever we want it to? How many decisions have we held ourselves back from? How many chances have we not taken because we're like, oh, I'm too old? Like, this wee girl is 19. When I was 19, I guarantee you, I would have thought I was too old as well. Now at 26, nearly 27, I'm kind of reversing that whole belief. I'm kind of like, I'm so young. Like, my whole life is ahead of me. It's now is the time to start. But like, don't ever think that you're too old to do something, because life begins again every day with every breath even. And you may as well just go after what you want, because the time's going to pass. It's going to pass anyway. You may as well be doing something you enjoy in that time. And that's it. That is my rundown of an evening with Gordon Ramsay. It was such a lovely evening, honestly. The man is really inspiring. Gordon, thank you for, you know, being honest and giving us a great talk. I actually don't know if you were being honest, but it seemed like you were being honest. The stories are great. You have gumption. You're very inspiring. And please give the Heathrow Airport plane food restaurant a visit and maybe just tell them to up their game a little bit. And maybe you don't need to charge a service charge and a cover charge, considering it's like an airport restaurant that isn't the best. Just throwing that out there. But all the other food experiences I've had have been great. I really like the street pizza in Dubai. I like that one that's like just off Regent Street as well. And I will hopefully go to a restaurant Gordon Ramsay at some point in the foreseeable. Maybe I'll see you there. Who knows? Anyway, to everybody who's not Gordon, thank you for listening. Thank you for joining. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I hope you didn't mind my ramblings, and I hope you got something from it, because I got a lot from that evening and I left feeling a lot more inspired, and I left just knowing that if I take a chance and I believe in it, then it's going to work out. So keep that in mind. Please don't forget to leave a review and rate teen if you have not before. Wherever you're listening to this, please share it with your friends if you would like to. Please download it and listen to it as many times as you would like, as all that really helps. But the reviews and ratings, really, really help. So I'd really appreciate it if you did that. And have a lovely weekend or week. It will be week because this is coming out tomorrow. The last thing that I want to plug for myself is that I am doing The Artist's Way at the minute. If you have followed me on Instagram, then you will know this because I've posted like some different things. It's at Rebecca Keane or at Life Actually the Podcast. I have two. I will leave them linked below. And the Artist Way is like this 12-week course to rediscover your creativity, basically. So I'm doing separate podcast episodes at the minute. I've just released the introduction one. It talks all about the basic principles and gives an overview into like my own creative journey. And then this Saturday or this Friday, I think I might release it on, I know I said Saturday earlier in this episode, but I kind of like the idea of releasing it on a Friday because then it's like Tuesday, Friday. But this Friday or Saturday, whenever it is, I will be releasing the week one review about how I find it, talking through the week one chapter, talking through the tasks that are there in week one, and talking through my, like, how I find them. Now, if you're not doing the Artist Way, you do not need to feel like this isn't for you. I definitely could have phrased that better, because it's still really interesting. Some of the lessons are still really there. And sometimes it's just nice to listen to other podcasts anyway, other podcast episodes that you don't think are going to interest you, but you still might get something from it. Because the, before it gets to the tasks, which is like the last 10 or 15 minutes of the episode, and it's an hour long, it talks a lot, like the chapter and that I talk through talks a lot about like beliefs and negative beliefs and affirmations and things like that. So it could actually just be a normal podcast episode for life actually as well. But I decided to make it a separate one so people can pick their interests. Anyway, give it a listen. Let me know what you think. And I will speak to you soon. You will hear from me on Friday if you tune in for the Artist Way. And if not, I will see you next Tuesday. Ooh, I shouldn't have said it like that. I will speak to you next Tuesday. Thanks, everybody. Bye.